Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I immediately regret that Captain Tom joke.
Best in the world on this microphone, in this ring, even on commentary. It's VGC, a video game podcast with me, Jordan Midler, Chris Scullion, and Andy Robinson. This week, it's Game Awards season. Yorkshire Tea want 150 quid off of you, and EA wants your voice in their games. But first, how are we doing, folks? Andy, sore head this morning?
No. I just popped into the pub last night to watch Man United get absolutely U-turned. Then what did I do? I came home, spent 2 hours trying to resist buying a Steam Deck, played a bit of Diablo, and then I went to bed. I had a lovely night's sleep, and here I am, all rested.
That's a very wholesome evening. It's astonishing to me that Andre Onana is somehow the worst goalkeeper in the Champions League in a tournament that includes Joe Hart. That's impressive, if anything. That should be record-beating. Chris, do you think you're a better goalkeeper than Andre Onana?
I'd give it a go.
Yeah,
I don't see why not. I'm shocked at the moment because I've just found out that the actor who played Jimmy Corkle in Brookside has died. God rest him, Dean Sullivan.
Episode not dedicated to him.
I know, but I only just found out like 2 minutes before coming on. I can't believe you're expecting me to carry on.
Okay, we'll have a 10-bell salute.
Such a state. One of the greatest cheesy moments in TV history was the last episode of Brookside, where the whole street's shut down and people have spray painted "Game Over" all the doors in Brookside, and then Jimmy Corkle like sadly walks over to the Brookside Close street sign and takes out spray paint and changes it to Brookside Closed. And then there's a wee smile and walks away, and that's the end of Brookside. God rest.
Were people not going to live there? Like, what was were they demolishing the whole street, or were they just?
I just cancelled the show, but I mean, I don't remember that. I don't actually remember why it ended or how it ended.
So these thugs have just destroyed this street for all these new families to move into, and they've just spray painted the whole.
I'll be honest with you, it was a long time ago. The main storylines we all remember is the controversial lesbian storyline, the controversial incest storyline, and the controversial man under the patio storyline. Brookside is very much groundbreaking, literally, in terms of the patio one.
What are we drinking this week, lads? Chris, have you given up on the Iron Brew energy drinks?
None of them, all four of them were mediocre at best. I'm thinking about the Iron Brew Extra, the kind of sugar-free.
Fair. Andy, I think last time you were here, you were talking about maybe getting into the energy drink game. Have you succumbed?
I had one of those amazing moments this morning. Like, for anyone like me who cannot operate without a coffee, I kind of turned on the coffee machine and realized that I'd ran out of coffee capsules. Mm. I had a moment like I'm not going to be able to function for this podcast. I spanned the rotisserie round. There was just one capsule that had fallen out.
Nice.
Yes.
That's glorious.
You know, you're going to have to get some today or the exact same thing will happen tomorrow.
Yeah, I know, it will. It absolutely will.
Okay, let's get into this week's headlines. Just for those keeping track, it's a white monster today. Not one of my favourites, but it's what was in the fridge. Story number one, a new EA patent lets players apply their own voice to game characters. As spotted by Very Alley Gaming, the patent, which is named, quote, "Generating speech in the voice of a player of a video game," was filed in 2020, but was published last month. The patent describes a process in which players, quote, "input data that represents speech content, which is then passed through a synthesizer module, a voice inverter, and a vocoder to generate new dialogue based on the sample."
That's how I'd do it, to be fair.
Yeah, I was reading that and I was thinking, that's a bit of a rudimentary way
I would have put the converter before the synthesizer, but what do I know?
Yeah.
It's quite a convoluted way to where the end result is that you could just talk over the gameplay yourself. It's great, Mario!
Everyone on Twitch does that anyway. Well, everyone who plays and streams games on Twitch always does comedy voices over the subtitles.
To replicate the voice of you who sat there and can speak.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay. The patent explains that previous attempts at generating speech in games often involves text-to-speech systems where the game receives text and uses a synthesizer to generate audio speech. However, this patent says that, quote, such approaches usually require many speech samples, e.g. hours of speech samples, in order for the synthesizer to accurately capture the voice. And if a different voice is needed, the synthesizer would need to be trained again. This leads me to my question for you, Chris Scullion.
Hello.
What video game character would you like to apply your voice to? The obscurer, the better. And because it's you, and I know you'll answer something from like the Commodore Amstrad BBC Micro era, it has to have been voiced originally.
It has to have already had a voice. Uh-huh. All right, well then, in that case, Oswald the Lucky Rabbit from Epic Mickey 2, The Power of Two.
Are you one of the three people that actually played that game? Congratulations.
Listen, I love Oswald. I'm a big Oswald mark, as they say.
Is Oswald still kicking a ball?
Disney bought the rights to him, swapped the rights to him for ESPN or something like back in the day. Like, Oswald, in fact,
oh, here we go.
Oswald plush here.
He's got his Oswald fleshlight out.
The magic of the audio medium.
Kids love Oswald.
Chris Scullion is holding an Oswald the Lucky Rabbit plush.
He's definitely he's certainly lucky.
Give us a blast of it. Give us a blast of your Oswald.
Well, no, because the whole point is it's my voice, isn't it? This is my Oswald. Hello, Oswald here.
Voice actors do voices.
I know, but if I'm putting a voice in an EA game, and the whole point is it's my voice, then I'm not going to put a daft voice on.
No.
All right, mate, Chris Scullion, you there? I'm just going to be myself. Right.
I'm Oswald the Lucky Rabbit. I would like to voice, you know, one of the orcs that show up in the Shadow of Mordor and Shadow of War games, so that when you go into your friend's game, your orc could pop up and go, "Oi, I killed you last week. I'm going to kill you again. I know where your mum lives." I think that would be quite enjoyable. But Andy, as someone who already has a cartoon voice...
I think you two have nailed it, actually. Like, I mean, I was going to say the merchant from Resident Evil 4. Sounds like you guys would do a better job. What are you buying, you mug?
What are you buying? What are yours? Yeah, this is a strange one. Oh, Chris, has this fallen into the realm of patents that get patented that we never hear of again?
Probably, but you know, so I don't mind this one. This seems to be a running theme on this podcast, which I'm not entirely comfortable with, is me defending AI. Like, every single time we do an AI story, I end up going, this will be all right. I think one of the big fears about AI voice generation is people's voices being replicated without their consent, whereas you're very much given your consent here. So I think it's fine. We've seen what like deep fake and voices and stuff are like these days, where you only really need 20 seconds of someone's voice and AI can generate whole like passages using that voice. So
Nvidia blow this patent out of the water? Didn't they show earlier this year a technology where you could talk to an NPC for a microphone and it would just generate responses based on what a narrative designer had written about for the backstory of this character? And you could just sit there and you could talk to them. People put it into GTA mods and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. But I think the difference is that when in those GTA mods, when the text is generated, it comes back as a kind of robotic sounding voice. Whereas this is the next step where it actually sounds.
I mean,
like
but it's first. It's you know, early doors though, right? I mean, they'll improve that. I mean, certainly I seem to remember the Nvidia demo being really impressive. Mm. I mean, that to me is the obvious, you know, use of AI if you're going to do it.
Yeah,
you know, I'm up for anyone really want their character to sound like them? Everyone hates the sound of their own voice, right? That's
not
a
me,
stupid
brother.
Idea. Imagine came up with that patent at EA is a plonker.
Imagine playing Zelda and the whole argument over whether Link can speak or not, and then they throw in the new argument, what if he spoke like you? It's like, well, that's even worse.
Yeah, great.
than him having him speaking like anyone else. I'd be, no thanks.
Knowing Nintendo, they wouldn't actually tell you that it was voiced by you until the game came out. They'd be completely secretive about it.
The other problem is it throws up even more kind of copyright and like kind of issues, because if it's like the way AI, the whole point of this patent is that it doesn't need hours and hours and hours of samples. You can only presumably record like 20, 30 seconds and that's enough. There's nothing to stop you holding the microphone up to a film and suddenly you've got Jack Nicholson playing Geralt or anyone from any movie Wiseau. You want.
And I'm pretty sure iPhone 15 already does this. Like the latest iOS, you can have it tell it to train based on your voice.
Yeah.
And then all the dictation will be read in your voice. It already does that.
So
yeah.
This is a rubbish patent, a rubbish story about a rubbish patent. Let's move on.
Good job, EA.
Thanks,
wasted EA. Everyone's time, EA, including us.
Merry Christmas. Thanks, Rachel. My iPad doesn't work with your charger. Story number two. Publisher confirms TimeSplitter Studios faces closure before Christmas. Studio Free Radical Design faces closure before Christmas. Publisher PlayOn has privately acknowledged. VGC reported earlier this month that Free Radical was at the threat of being closed just 2 years after it was established as part of huge company-wide cuts at Embracer and its own publishers. Although Embracer has yet to publicly confirm it, Free Radical's position, sources told VGC that PlayOn has now acknowledged in a company email that the Nottingham UK-based studio could be closed on December 11th following the completion of the consultation process. Quote, as we move through the consultation process and face the potential closure of Free Radical Design on 11th December 2023, I want to express my gratitude for your commitment and the remarkable work you've done and still keep doing, wrote PlayOn VP Worldwide Studios and Talent, Lars Janssen. Andy, you've been ferreting this one out. We're thinking this is it.
People have Free Radical. I think it's just like a natural progression of my last story, really.
Yeah.
You know, under UK employment law, you've got to be put into consultation for so long, right, based on how many employees you've got. So I think it's 30 days for them. They've got around 80 people, I believe. So this was always coming. It's always like in legalese speak, they have to say, oh, we're exploring possibilities and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, like there is a small chance that someone swoops in during that period, but for all intents and purposes, they just want to get rid of it, right? I mean, it's a ridiculous situation, another ridiculous situation for this preposterous, you know, a capitalist monster that was just buying up stuff with little regard for the people who actually work for it or probably their consumers. This studio was formed 2 years ago, reformed, you know, after it had already closed, you know, 10, 15 odd years ago. To make this game that fans have been waiting for that had already been cancelled once before the first time they closed. And now they're being closed again. Like, it's just the amount of energy, the waste of energy and talent around this is just pretty disgusting. Mm-hmm. All of these people who've, like, you know, probably relocated and, you know, kind of dedicated 2 years of their life building this game that's now been shelved because somewhere else in their business the graph goes down. It's you know, it's nonsense, to be honest. There's still a small chance that, you know, someone swoops in before the 11th of December, I think was the date. But from the Free Radical employees I've spoken to, no one's expecting that. There was even, after we published our story, I did note that I think a big reason why I published the first story and a big reason why probably, you know, various people wanted it out there is because, you know, like if you're, I mean, we know what it's like for me and Chris when they close CVG. When a company does that, they're quite happily for you just to, they'll ask you not to tell anyone, right? Sit in silence and then just get made redundant, please.
Yeah.
When actually you want people to know about it so that you can get a job or hopefully someone buys you. Yeah. That is in the interest of the employees. And it was nice to see after our first story, like a bunch of other kind of Midlands-based studios came out and guaranteed interviews for their employees. And I actually noticed yesterday after this latest one that Splash Damage quoted our tweet. I haven't got it in front of me, so this might be slightly wrong. And they basically said, we've already interviewed like a dozen of their employees and we've already given a dozen of them jobs. So, you know, it's already happening. Yeah, I think there is pretty much no chance of this decision being reversed. You know,
The at Bulkhead also quote retweeted VGC.
Yeah, saying, that's Splash Damage, yeah.
Oh, is that a part of that? Okay, still accepting applications, and five incredible developers have already been hired and several more will be sent their offer letters this week. So I'm not really au fait with that kind of part of the UK, but it seems like there's still a lot of developers down there. There's potential, hopefully, for a lot of people
There's tons of developers. You know, we're one of the development hubs of the world. And especially right now, after the pandemic, there's been such a demand for kind of experienced developers. I mean, I even after my story, I had a bunch of people reach out to me and say, like, you know, we you know, without them sounding like malicious, like, oh, we actually need loads of people. You know, we can help these guys. So yeah, hopefully they all land on their feet. But for me, it's just like, it's a big gap in your, it's a waste of your life, right? Everyone wanted to see that game, at least let the game come out and flop.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's,
and the crap thing is the way games are made these days, it's not like they can even, they'll be in the future, hope that their work will ever be kind of unearthed one day. Like, you look now, you're constantly getting prototypes from the 8-bit and 16-bit all the way up to like the Dreamcast and PS2 era. People are sharing old discs with the prototype versions of games. So games that never existed, you can still, in the future, like, hopefully someone will stumble upon this disc and you'll get to see what they were working on. But the way games are made these days, like, nobody has like a disc with yeah. those games will be kept on play on servers and probably deleted at some point, and we'll never get to see what they've been working on for the past 2 years. Like, this will just disappear and all their work will kind of presumably just be for nothing and nobody will ever get to see it, which is like, yeah, depressing.
Even if you managed to like get the file or whatever, you would just be greeted with like a loading screen, like a menu screen that would like connect to the servers or whatever. So I imagine that this kind of thing happened, and it happened with Battlefront 3, as you say, that just videos of this game will come out, and the time splitters, man, what an absolute cursed license. Like, I wonder how close that was to actual completion, and I wonder if anyone picks up after this, because presumably Embracer will be selling anything they can for like a fiver. Terrible stuff, and a crap year that will probably continue. Chris, I've got sad news for you.
It's not Sega. Somebody else from Brookside has died. somebody from El Dorado.
Somebody from Home and Away. Sega says Sonic Superstars had, quote, a weaker start than anticipated. Oh, never mind that. There's a dog on the pod video. If you're an audio only listener, get on the video right now, because there's a dog on the pod. Look at that tiny thing. He's
right. Behave.
She's going to behave. Quote, this is from Sega. Sonic Superstars was released in October, which is a slightly weaker start than we'd anticipated, but in reality, when the Sonic IP sells the most, it's mainly November to December, and more than 90% of this title's marketing costs will be spent in the Thanksgiving and holiday season from November onwards. Chris, why on earth did they release this game alongside the first new 2D Mario in about 700 years?
It's unbelievable that they're coming out saying, that's weird, the Sonic game didn't sell as well as we told. So you'd come out 3 days before Mario.
Wonder what happened then.
What the hell were you, did you think? Did you think everyone was going to go, actually, never mind Mario, Sonic's back again for the first time in a year? Do you know, it's a good game. That's the thing. I'm not concerned about it. Like, it will continue to sell. It just won't. Obviously, its peak is passing. By all accounts, it did well during Black Friday, but it's one of those annoying stories, because the amount of Sonic defenders that were on Twitter last night after we wrote this story, loads of people on all the Sonic fans coming out saying, this doesn't mean it's a failure. This doesn't mean it's a failure. It's like, I didn't say it was. I'm just saying that, like, I'm literally quoting Sega. Sega themselves have said they didn't sell as well as we'd hoped. Like, I'm not, our story, we're not. Someone thought we were doing a hit piece on Sonic. It's like, we're literally quoting Sega. What do you want me to say? So this was they said this before Black Friday. It's like, aye, but they were disappointed then. They still were. It's like, it's fine. It'll do okay. It'll sell fine. It's got good review scores. Chill.
Yeah, bit odd, that one, right?
Yeah,
very odd. I don't know why they did that. If there was a Chris String in here, I'm sure he'll add some sort of explanation, because there must be one, because it seems bonkers, right?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be fine. I don't understand why they were so, why they even had to say that. I suppose the financials, they have to say all over the first kind of, because they would have had predictions, and obviously the predictions weren't met, but it's like, so what? It'll do well. It'll keep selling.
Yeah.
Don't worry, Sonic fans. Everything's okay. You're enjoying a good period just now. Just enjoy it while it lasts, because we know with Sonic, these things don't always last.
I mean, we got to see Shadow's feet yesterday, so it was pretty exciting. Did you see that the absolute Sonic nerds, the Alex Donaldsons of the world, were freaking out about the logo for the new film being the same logo as Adventure 2? Because this is... I'm a man that has a a Christmas Pikachu sitting next to him, so I get it. It's just I just don't get why Sonic, you know? Chris, why Sonic? Think about it for a minute.
Because
philosophize why Sonic.
Because he's a rad dude with a tood, I believe. Is a tood being short for attitude, of course.
Of course, yeah. The tood era, my favourite wrestling period.
The tood era. Just Sonic's the Sonic is the... I'm trying to think of a good analogy here. If Mario,
it's nostalgia,
is,
isn't it? Right?
Yeah, pretty much. Sonic was for the slightly older kids who thought they had an attitude, like that. Your wee brother played Mario and you played Sonic, that kind of thing. So Sonic is for the cool kids, for the kids who thought they were cool.
So your wee brother played some of the greatest games ever made, and you played Pish, essentially.
I'll defend Sonic. I do like a Sonic game.
I loved Sonic when I was a kid. I was probably a bigger Sonic fan than I was a Mario fan when I was a kid. But let's be real, Sonic has not been great for like best part of 20 years, right? So I guess nostalgia plays a huge part. And I get that. Like, I watch, as someone who's not really paid attention to the Sonic games much since Dreamcast, but was a big fan. Like, I got a big, you know, kind of thrill out of those films, right?
Yeah.
Like, the nostalgia and stuff like that. But I don't know why. I guess it's one of those fan bases where when you've suffered so much, you get a bit culty, you know, back to the wall. It's like Arsenal fans, basically, just being abused and rubbish. And
there's lots of extremes when you talk about Sonic. Like, the Sonic fan base love absolutely everything. And there are people who hate everything about Sonic, but I've always been kind of like Mario games have been consistently excellent. Sonic games have been consistently fine.
I mean, like, what's the worst Mario game of the last 20 years?
Sunshine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You bang on as well. You couldn't have been quicker. Sunshine's the worst one. Yeah.
Yeah. And even then, it's better.
What's the second worst one?
New Brothers 2 on the Wii.
I really like that. But really? Again, you're probably right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but both of those would be like the best Sonic games.
Yeah easily. I think if Sonic got a game as good as Sunshine, Sonic fans would be talking about it for 50 years.
Sonic games have been consistently okay, and you'll get good ones like Mania was excellent, Superstars is excellent, but for the most part, they've been like 6-7 out of 10 games, and that's fine.
I can't wait to play Superstars as well. Superstars, like, and again, that says a lot that I've not played it.
Yeah.
Because I was busy playing bloody Mario Wonder.
Yeah, but this
you know, for
you
the second
this,
time.
You mean the sealed Mario Wonder?
Oh, here we go. Every week he flaunts it.
it's unbelievable. You've not... Like, Chris Urin, official Nintendo magazine's Chris Scullion, has not played Mario Wonder, has not played Tears of the Kingdom, and has not played Pikmin 4.
I've got a result.
You need to hand in your Nintendo card, mate. Give it back.
Listen,
he's Xbox hoodie. But he's played, like, Forza.
Yeah.
And all the rest. Yeah.
He's completed Redfall.
Need to put some achievements on Pikmin 4, don't they? You'll be well in there.
We're not getting into the review code debate in public. The point is that Mario Wonder is my reward for finishing my book, and that's I've been steadfastly stubborn.
Yeah. What are the other two rewards for?
Just living, just making it to 40 without having to dye my hair. that's the result. Still having dark hair.
I really hope you enjoy Mario Wonder in those 30 seconds between finishing this book and starting the next one. You'll probably get through like one or two levels, and that'll be you.
I'm quite jealous, actually. That is an amazing Christmas game.
Yeah.
Like, in the, you know, like where you'd obviously you'd have Christmas games when you're kids, but ones as you get a little bit older, you'd save one for Christmas, right? I haven't done that for probably 10 years. Mario Wonder is a tremendous Christmas game.
I think that might actually be subconsciously why I'm doing it as well, because like I joined the official Nintendo magazine in 2006, and I've done most of the Mario games, and like I've always, you know, it's like when you review these things, you have to hammer through them. I've not been able to sit down and enjoy a Mario game since probably Sunshine, like without having to rush it. I think I'm getting myself that Christmas feeling again. Is like this. No, I'm going to have like a Christmas game again, like I used to. And it's
and you know what as well? It's great in multiplayer. Like I play it with I'm playing it again with my daughters, and it's brilliant just to like have them, you know, kind of lead it, and you can kind of help out a little bit. It's a much, much better multiplayer game than the previous ones, because they hated New Super Mario Bros. U, because and this is a problem that I had with those New Super Mario Bros. Games as well, is that they made the multiplayer like purposely antagonistic.
Yeah.
I've nicked all your stuff. Oh, I've jumped off your head and you're dead. And, you know, I bumped into you and you didn't make the jump. Great, that's fun. Yeah, I'm having a great time.
It's grim. Also, Sonic Superstars also not good in co-op. Just warning you in advance. It's too fast. It's like and as soon as you go off the screen, you kind of come back in like a bubble type thing. And because it's so fast, whoever goes first, everyone else gets knocked off the screen instantly. It's like it just doesn't work. Nobody in their right mind should have thought Sonic would work as a 4-player co-op game.
Obviously, really, really poor one out for sad old me. I've played every game this year, so I have nothing to play over Christmas. It's a really tragic episode, although I'm pretty sure I'll get a review code before Christmas that I can be playing. But I have played Forza and it looks nice, but I'm completely broken on semi racing games. I can't play them for more than a couple of races. I need somewhere that I can go and sit down and really think about the history of cars, perhaps
like a cafe, like a kind of Gran Turismo style cafe, is what you're thinking.
Yeah, something like that. Something that I can just have a wee cup of tea and a biscuit, and I can be told how the combustion engine.
I love how Chris just totally missed the satire there.
Yeah,
well, I got it.
You mean like Gran Turismo?
No, I got it.
Yes, that was the joke.
I got it. I just it was more for the benefit of the listeners who haven't played it and therefore didn't get it. I thought I'd just join the dots, fill them in.
That's one for the heads. That's one for the people that know that we make fun of Gran Turismo every week on this podcast. After we come back, we've got a Jeff Keighley triple header and a controller made out of tea. We'll see you in a minute.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And we are back. Thank you for your promotional consideration, whoever's sponsoring us this week. Chris, who's sponsoring us this week?
Awkwardly, I believe it's a box set of Brookside. The price of that's going to rocket.
Yeah, I imagine so. When I worked in HMV briefly, every time a musician died, we would get an email being like, following the sad news of Gary Glitter's untimely
sell.
Yeah. Like, they had a stand that they would bring out, and it'd be like remembering
the death
whoever
stand.
And then yeah
death
exactly the Undertaker was just standing next to it like, oh, get your whoever died CD.
So when you brought it out, did the like other members of staff ask you like, what are you doing, Jordan? You just said, oh, I'm just death standing.
Nice. That's good, that's strong. What was the year everyone died? Was it 2016? They might have well just kept it on the floor the entire time.
Yeah, Bowie died that year. And a lot Prince. Of people carked it. It was a good moment on BBC Radio that year when Bowie died. They came on the news and they're like, this morning we're starting with the news that David Cameron has died. David Bowie has died. And for a wee minute, everyone was like, yes! And I was like, oh, no. David. No Big Dave. No foreign sec David Bowie. We have a Jeff Keighley triple header. Keighley's all over the shop. He's ready for the Game Awards. Do you know who's going to be at the Game Awards? Who's going to be presenting Game of the Year? One Andy Robinson. If you do get to present Game of the Year, Andy, and
do you know it's quite bad because I was actually there last year, right? Uh-huh. And I can't remember who won Game of the Year. I was sat there earlier thinking, who won Game of the Year last year? I can't remember.
The only reason I remember it being Elden Ring was because...
So you can't remember either?
Elden Ring.
Elden Ring because the guy rushed the stage after it.
Oh, that's yeah,
the only reason usually they get the previous winner to hand out Game of the Year, right? So maybe they're going to get that kid. hand out Game of the Year. Because you got to think that Miyazaki's not flying over to give, like, you know, to give Baldur's Gate Game of the Year.
Yeah. Although, if they get that kid to do the... In fact, I can't even. Well, I can't, They've already, I'm not going to talk about it, but there's a moment in Alan Wake 2 that kid could replicate wonderfully. Anyway, let's get some Keighley news going. Speaking of that kid, the Game Awards security will be tightened to prevent another stage invasion. This is Jeff Keighley as part of one of his live streams. Both the Game Awards 2022 and Gamescom Opening Night Live were disrupted by unauthorized people. I love that phrase. You're not an authorized person. You're not lanyarded coming onto the stage.
Maybe they're just going to give Jeff a gun.
Give him a samurai sword. The incidents have raised concerns for the safety of Keighley and other guests who take the stage to give and receive awards and discuss upcoming games. In a Q&A stream on Twitch, Keighley was asked if he'd be taking more security measures for this year's show. Keighley said he was, but he didn't want to go into specifics for would-be invaders wouldn't know the security plans in advance.
It's going
to
be held in like a MMA octagon.
He says, yeah, there'll be two guards here and two guards there, and we'll leave a gap here. So just if anyone's taking notes.
I like to picture that, you know, have you seen clips of Pink on her recent tours where she gets like hooked into, she gets hooked into like a circus harness and gets thrown like across the arena? I would like that to be Jeff's escape plan. So if anyone steps foot on stage, he just gets launched to the other side of the arena and he still keeps going, talks about Shik Hydrobot. Quote, "We definitely have plans that we're trying to do all we can to keep me safe, but also everyone watching the show, the audience, and people participating in the show and everything. I feel quite safe being here, but I do appreciate
you." I'm glad they want us to be safe.
Like, yeah, we're gonna get two heavies turning up at the door. I've just got Tom Ivan with AK-47. It's certainly something we're thinking about. We appreciate the concern. Andy, you were in the room when it happened. How long before people realised something was up? Was there a wee nudge? Like, who is this wee guy with a
big haircut? I don't know if it says more about how much I had to drink there or how old I'm getting. I don't even remember it. I don't remember it at all. I think at that point, all I was thinking was, how quickly can I get out to the hotel bar?
Mm.
Because there were a lot of people there, right?
Yeah.
And those, for people who've ever been to LA Live, those tables in the JW Marriott are highly sought after. Like, you need to get out and get yourself a table because you're securing your future for the next 6 hours. You get one of those tables. So I probably wasn't even watching at that point. I don't think it helped that I was, I got sat like my seats, right? They were sort of like, so at the theater, I don't think they do like the top floor, the top tier, or whatever you want to call it. They kind of do the ground floor seats, the good ones. So they don't fill the whole place. And I was sort of like midway to the front and to the left. And in front of me was just like, there were no, the seats on the side were like, there were no seats on the front or the side. That was just like for production staff and stuff. Mm. So I was like at the front of the left, like halfway to the stage. Like, oh, these are quite good. Yeah. And then once they started, I just had a big crane in front of me, camera crane. So I basically had to watch the thing on some guy's monitor, like who was on a crane. So I probably didn't even see it, probably looking at the crane.
So you're basically the Chris Kamara of the Game Awards. There's
some of that. Yeah, yeah,
just me. Did he?
What did he? I thought that was a developer.
I don't know, Jeff Keighley.
Do you know as well, like it's almost like it's the football thing, right? For those of us who go to live football often, you can relate to this, that when you're actually there, you don't see as much as you do on the television, because you guys watching at home, you've got all the audio.
Yeah.
Like they're like, oh, so, you know, hear him say Bill Clinton and oh, he's all sorry. And you might even have a commentator, obviously in the case of football, telling you what's happening.
Yeah.
When you're in the room, you're just like, what was it? Because I'm just see like a blob in the distance on the stage. Is that? Did something happen? Yeah, there's a rumor spreading that something happened. Did it? Mm. Man on Reddit says this.
Yeah,
we need to get Ali McCoist commentating the Game Awards going forward. I think we could probably make that happen, Chris. We could have a word.
Yeah.
What's the guy that does all the flowery stuff? Peter Drury, is that him? The commentator that does the big long soliloquies about every player. It's the boy who became a boy at Chelsea, who became a man at Liverpool, who became a man again at Chelsea, and it's literally like Reece James taking a throw in. It's like, calm down, mate. It's not that big a deal.
My favourite one, I don't think he's with us anymore. I'm sure it was called Dick Donnelly, and he used to do during Scottish football on the radio. He used to do all the Dundee games because he lived up north, and he had this really nasally like up north accent, so he'd always cut. Oh, so we'll see what Dick Donnelly has to say. And go, yeah, join us here at a Dreich and Drizzly Dens Park, Dundee. It's just like the most garbage chat, the most miserable game. But yeah, God rest him, if he's dead.
Sadly, Charles Richard Donnelly, a.k.a. Dick, left us in 2016. So. Oh,
2016 again. Yeah. It was Prince, Bowie, and Dick Donnelly.
Get the death standing out.
HMV had the best of Dick Donnelly.
Next story. The Game Awards host and producer says, Geoff Keighley says that he's considering a best remake and best supporting actor. Chris, a best remake, do you think, I'm not going to ask Andy about this because I'm going to let him charge up his remake versus remaster engines because
no one loves this chat
more than Andy Robinson. Good idea, best remake?
Nah.
I mean, Resident Evil would absolutely sweep it this year. But
yeah, but then what happens next year? Hee-haw. No.
The Last of Us Part 2?
No. That's a remaster.
That's a remaster.
No.
Andy, an award, good idea or bad idea?
I think it's a great idea. I think the you see, like, from the reception to that story that we've put out, that I think there's a lot of interest. I mean, every kind of player of video games now kind of knows what a remake is, without getting into the details of remake versus remaster. I think it's something that players care about. I mean, to Geoff's point, I used to run the Golden Joysticks for a couple of years, so I get that, you know, that it is difficult in terms of making categories that are going to be consistently relevant. So he said, like, you know, there might not always be a remake, but for me, I just do remake or re-release. Best remake or re-release or something like that, right? I mean, I guess you're delving a bit too close to that. Oh, they just put Cyberpunk Game of the Year Edition or whatever, but there's always going to be now consistently remakes and remasters every year. Mm. Like, I'd love to kind of actually sit down and analyze that and go, well, have there been any gap years recent where there haven't been many? I think they should do it, absolutely. And best supporting actor as well. I think that gives more recognition to, you know, people who are kind of behind the screen, so to speak, behind the camera on these games, because there's now way too many of them for just one category. Yeah. I think they should do both, personally.
The problem is, if you do best remake, they'll just go and nominate Dave the Diver anyway. He'll end up winning it.
But this is the problem. Like, you're at the behest of, in this case, the media outlets. Mm-hmm. My personal opinion is, I think the Game Awards is the best run gaming awards. Mm-hmm. I think it's better than BAFTA. I think it's better than the Golden Joysticks and all the others that you would name the big hitters.
Agreed.
And I think part of that is that, I mean, again, without blowing our own horn, because obviously we are a media outlet. Woo! I think the best people for this job are critics.
Agreed.
They are. Like, I mean, I went and worked in game development for 4 or 5 years, and I went in thinking, wow, like, here we go, going to meet the real experts here. And again, without putting them down, like, they are experts in making games, but they don't have time to play everything. Yeah. They don't. They're making games.
Yeah.
Like, people think, like, oh, you know, Corey Barlog and Drew Druckmann and stuff like that, Neil Druckmann, are like the real, like, they play everything and they know everything inside out. They don't have time to play everything inside out. They're too busy making their games. And if anything, a lot of them might even consider it as somewhat of a distraction. Mm-hmm. So the real experts in the professional landscape of what games are good are critics that are playing everything, right? There are very few people out there, consumers, who play everything, mm-hmm. and also, you know, are critically astute. The freelancers that I'd always, they were my go-to. You know, the freelancers that have to review absolutely every game. And that's why you kind of see, like, on the critical side, on game sites, innovation gets overly rewarded and iteration gets overly punished, right? Because the guys reviewing these games play everything.
Yeah.
Like, it always, like, I remember it opened my eyes once when I was on CBG, like, 10, 15 years ago, where I was at the football or something, and some friend I had there was telling me about some game he was really enjoying, and we'd given it, like, a 6 out of 10. Like, everyone had, like, kind of, like, given the middling reviews, and he's like, hey, absolutely loved it. And it was a real eye-opening moment, because it's like, but the perception of someone who plays 2 games a year, he doesn't care if this is a massive knockoff and not particularly, stand out within its genre. He doesn't care, whereas a critic does. Right, I've digressed massively here anyway, but So what was even the original question?
That's better than Paul Manning's original question.
They basically, like, so the Game Awards is, for those who don't know, they have 130 outlets across the world, including VGC, who vote, basically, for, you know, the nominations, and then we put our winners in, and that's kind of mixed with a public vote as well, which takes up a portion. I mean, nothing's perfect, but I personally think this is the way to go. I don't disagree with any of the winners, many of the winners of the past. You know, again, as someone who worked on the other system when I was briefly on the management team for the Golden Joysticks, which is entirely public voted, the developers really care about that, really. Like, I mean, when I was at the award, like From Software and stuff like that, like when they won Game of the Year there, it really mattered to them that it came from the fans. Mm-hmm. However, as someone who was behind the scenes, trying to manage a public voted awards is a nightmare compared to something like this. Yeah. I mean, people are here saying, oh, Dave the Diver's not an indie game. That is a small crumb compared to the absolute nonsense you have to put up for when the public are picking everything, mm-hmm. because they will just vote for whatever they've heard of. You know, you have to be so on with your categories, because if they don't resonate with the audience, people just vote for, it's like you do like stuff like, I think we'd like Best Family Game, and you got core gamers voting for this, right? Mm. They don't care. Yeah. They got Guitar Hero win every year. Guitar Hero, because I've heard of that. You know, best graphics, I've heard of this game. You know, Diablo, yeah, whatever.
And also,
they're not like really putting thought into
it. And also, on the other hand, you get people who care too much about specific games, and you end up with like skewed results.
Oh yeah, it becomes like a community.
You get like a World of Tanks situation where every single person who loves World of Tanks is told to go and vote for it. The World of Tanks wins. I mean, everyone else is like, what?
It's skewed massively. I mean, it's interesting though, because I'm sure, because they are, I understand that because they have one publicly voted award at the Game Awards. And I think their website right now, you can vote for, like, nominate your game. Mm-hmm. And someone managed to extract the data of, like, what's leading. And I think someone said, bar one game, the Game of the Year nominations are exactly the same. Mm. As the critic ones. And I'm sure it was Cyberpunk, which was the exception. And it's like, well, they've got a massive community, which they've probably pushed to go and vote. I mean, as someone who has firsthand knowledge of that, well, the Golden Joysticks, the CBG, I was in charge of like speaking to all of our editors and coming together with the nominations. We saw all the votes in real time. You know, I did absolutely everything other than the running of the event itself. That made a huge difference. If it was a company that had a big community that was willing to push them, then they've got a big chance, right?
Yeah.
I do wonder I think maybe this is going to make me sound like a total dick, but there's a lot of people that vote for the Game Awards that obviously can't play as many games as someone who is in the mines 24/7, and I have often wondered if there's a place for an expert panel of like, you have to have played everything to get onto this kind of thing.
Well, I mean, what do you mean? Like, I mean, all there's 130 outlets. So you look at them all on there; their teams would review pretty much everything.
No, I'm talking about individuals though, like someone who can say confidently that they have played everything that is on that list. If there's a, because you know the way that BAFTA do it, there's like a group of like 10 people that basically.
Yeah, but I mean, we get to BAFTA. BAFTA is a completely other different problem, because the thing with BAFTA is that it's professionals within the games industry who are willing to pay money to be on BAFTA, who then get sent 50 million games, which you can't possibly play as an individual. You like, it's not like they, I mean, it's from the film model, right? Yeah. You send someone all the films a year, you can bash them out. Like, they're an hour, 2 hours long, right?
Yeah.
You're not doing that with a 40-hour game, like, you know, 140-hour games. So BAFTA has the opposite problem where, obviously, companies themselves have to pay to put their game forward. Mm-hmm. So it's not everything. And the juries are... they're professionals, right? So again, like, they're a mix of like game developers and like community managers and publishing staff and all like very, very knowledgeable people in the game space. who, you know, absolutely should have a say. But for me, like, you can't expect a panel, you know, of people who haven't been able to play everything to be choosing the winners. Because, again, you look at the BAFTAs, the stuff that wins is usually the stuff that's the most accessible. Mm. I mean, I was not surprised in the slightest when Vampire Survivors won Game of the Year, because they can all play it in 5 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
Final Fantasy 14 or big MMO is not winning Game of the Year anytime soon because none of them will play it.
Yeah.
It's a different issue.
Very quickly, last Keely story. He's getting rid of the world premiere because he wants first looks and reveals and things to stand side by side. Chris, what do you think of this? Because personally, that makes me a bit sad because I think the world premiere is about hype. And I like hype. I like games.
I'm delighted it's going. Because I've had arguments in the past during, like, while working on these things, like when we've been covering them. I don't know if it's been certainly at VGC, but certainly in the past, whenever you got like world premiere, I would actively be arguing with people while we were trying to do work, saying, "This isn't a premiere. This isn't like a lot of it is like trailers for games we already know about." And in by my definition, that's not a world premiere. That's like a new trailer of a game. In my definition, a world premiere is you have never heard of this, and this is a big.
That's really interesting because I was when Jeff was talking about, because he was talking exactly in terms that you are right, like, oh, there was stuff existing, but world premieres, they're premiering the trailer.
Well, in that case, every single
the trailer's
thing,
a world premiere.
In that case, every single thing they're showing that night is
that's what they're saying. Yeah, so they're taking the branding off,
yeah, which is correct, because unless you should only be saying world premiere if it's a game nobody's ever heard of, and if that's not the case, then if you're going to say it for everything, then punt it, because it becomes. But I might as well just say, "Here's a trailer," because that's what it means. Then at that point, everything, every single thing they show is a world premiere.
I think it's a shame. I think it should keep it.
I think it should keep it, but only for new games.
Yeah, I agree.
To differentiate between
that is not exactly.
So when it says world premiere, you go, "Oh wait a minute, here's a new announcement."
Here's
trailer 3 for Call of Duty. It's like,
you've seen this before.
Exactly.
Very quickly before the next story, Chris, favourite reveal ever? While you're thinking about this, I'll say PlayStation Experience Last of Us Part 2 for me. This, your favourite reveal?
It's got to be the Zelda one when Miyamoto came out with the sword, Twilight Princess.
What was that? Was that Skyward Sword?
Twilight Princess, I think.
Yeah, I was there. That was amazing.
That's got to be that.
That's my top two press conferences that I've been at. That's... I can't choose which one.
What was number
one?
The Konami one with the wrestlers in it.
so that one, that was E3 04, I want to say. Mm. And they announced the Nintendo DS. And at the time, it was like, I mean, obviously, it seems like really like antiquated now, but it was like, here's a brand new Metroid game running on Nintendo DS. And he was like, oh my God, like a big 3D first person shooter. Here's Mario 64 running on what? Like a freak. Before that, you got GBA, your Super Nintendo graphics, right? Yeah. It was incredible. We didn't know that exactly the same time Sony was showing PSP, which obviously made it look rubbish. but you're in that and you're like, oh, that's amazing. I think they have Metroid Prime 2, Resident Evil 4. And then, yeah, that trailer at the end, everyone just went ballistic because around that time, everyone was so much resentment towards the Wind Waker because of obviously how they changed the art direction. But probably topping that was the PlayStation, was it 15 or 16? You're never beating back-to-back Last Guardian, Shenmue 3, Final Fantasy 7 remake.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't give like a toss about any of those games, really. Like, I've never been a big like Team Ico guy. I'm not a big Final Fantasy guy. Shenmue like is just way out of my rearview mirror now. But even I was like, whoa, oh my God. In the room, it was like incredible. Like the that's why we need to go back to in-person stuff. Yeah. You're just never replicating that from a crappy live stream.
No, agreed.
Where is Hip Hop Gamer? We need him back.
Hip Hop Gamer was there going mental.
It's disappointing anytime we're covering a Nintendo Direct or one of these things and we're all in a chat like similar to this and writing and something big for me will happen and I'll go, oh, and everyone's just going, so a blank expression on their face. I'm like, but they're bringing back cooking another code in us. So.
Who cares? I think Nintendo have never been really big for it, to be fair. They always like, I mean, obviously, I've been doing directs now for like 10 years, but even before that,
Like a lot of the Wii stuff was, you know, it wasn't positioned for the megaton. It was more like, let us show you how the balance board works for like 5 years before that.
Remember the awful Wii U one where when they first showed the Wii U, it must have been 15 minutes showing that Luigi's Mansion Nintendo Land minigame. They try to say, look at this, this is how asymmetric multiplayer works. And everyone's like, mate, you've lost us. Like, we don't care. You're giving us a tutorial here that's lasted forever. Get a move on.
I was also at the Sony 2006, I think it was, at the Sony Pictures lot, the Ridge Racer.
Ridge Racer.
Man. Like, I was so jet-lagged as well, because I think it was quite late, because usually they do them in the olden days. I think it would be Xbox would do the day before, so it was probably like Sunday or something. Mm. And then on the Monday, it would be Nintendo in the morning, first thing, and Sony wouldn't do theirs too stupidly late. It was really weird, like, because the others were positioned so that in Europe and everywhere they could watch it.
Yeah.
But they would do theirs late, so for those of us susceptible to jet lag, God, I was super jet lagged, and they're showing me that bloody game Africa with the rhinos, like, you know, ears just fluttering, and here's Ridge Racer.
That is peak old Sony. You'd never get an Africa these days.
Exactly. Oh yeah, in hindsight, we all long for that crazy bonkers Sony now, right?
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Like, you present an Africa to Jim Ryan, who'll slap you across the face.
I do remember those days, like when Sony went on really late, because when we were at Future, we'd be covering it, and we were like literally at the office like 3-4 in the morning, with the security guard coming in and going, what's going on? like, don't ask.
Yeah,
and trying to somehow get home in London, like just before they did all night tubes. It's just absolutely brutal. Absolutely brutal.
Before all night shoes, before Ubers.
Yep.
Yeah. Just walk, mate. Yeah. Get stabbed to ribbons.
Worth it.
Final. Worth it
for the premiere of Tokyo Rain.
Final story. Yorkshire Tea is selling 150 quid PS5 and Xbox Series XS controllers. They've been designed by Pope Art, whoever he is, and come with a certificate of authentication.
He's the guy that does. He does like loads of like Xbox kind of like fan skins and designs and stuff like that.
He's
quite well known on social media among the kids.
I'm not interested, mate. The design on the controllers is meant to emulate a box of Yorkshire tea. I asked the VGC maniacs what product or what anything really they would like to see collaborated with a controller. Our friend of the show, Lucy James, says pickled onion monster munch. Which brought to mind that I've not had a Monster Munch in years. Maybe
every time I go to Japan, my friends there ask me to bring them packs and packs of it.
Really? Why?
Dan Robson, who edits IGN Japan, I bought him like a massive multi pack, and he said his daughter just ate the lot in like one sitting. He got like
See, I prefer the beef ones. I know I said that's an unpopular. Oh,
they are all good. Yeah, are all good.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you eat a Monster Munch, Chris? Is that correct?
Usually orally. tend to get most of the nutrients that way. I just eat marijuana. I don't bother with it. You don't get idiots to like do a toe at a time and like, oh, this boy, this guy here.
You've got to enjoy it.
Nah.
There will come a time where they don't make Monster Munch anymore. That is on the endangered species.
There'll come a time in your life where you don't have a lot of free time and you can't spend 20 minutes in a bag of crisps.
Certainly won't, brother. Think anyone's going to procreate with me? Don't worry about that. I'll be fine. we have from our friend Tamur Hussein a wee Bombay Mix controller. Yeah.
Yeah. Tamur used to sit there with like a, you know, like a what's the name of like a Costco wholesale bag of Bombay Mix. That'd be him at 2 a.m. covering that Sony conference with his Bombay Mix.
Definitely.
a good suggestion. Frazzles. Can you still get Frazzles?
Oh, you can't beat Frazzles. What a crisp.
Are they still going?
What a crisp. Oh, Frazzles. You ever had a Frazzle sandwich?
No, I'm not a crisp sandwich man.
I might have a crisp sandwich now.
On the podcast, just eat it into the mic. Between your dog going mental and the crisp sandwich, it's a real audio cornucopia this week.
Thing is, she likes a crisp as well, so she will be going mental.
Yeah, my dogs like crisps too.
We're dangerously verging on, do you remember, Opal Fruits territory?
just Opal fruits
and marathon bars.
They call them wine gums now. That was from Rosalie over at PC Games. And this is, I mean, this is, as you say that, this is a lot of old school shit. Although, Aaron Bain, friend of the show, a wee MD2020. But to be fair, MD2020 is basically the colour palette of all these Xbox controllers they keep shitting out. It's just absolutely radioactive nonsense. Chris, product crossover with a controller?
I mean, Iron Brew is obvious. That's an obvious answer.
They'll make an Iron Brew controller and not let you have one.
Don't get me started. Like, they've got their wee kind of group of Scottish influencers who they give all their crap to, and I've never been part of it, despite flying the flag for all these years.
That's the place to be, mate. If you want Xbox shit, apparently you've got to be in their circle.
Speaking of influencers, I think my dream controller would be a Mr. Beast themed controller.
Oh, nice.
Every time you press the share button, it does a really kind of self-congratulatory YouTube video about how to make sure that everyone knows that you've shared something.
Yeah, I cured 2,000 people's blindness with these big bright white teeth. There's a good YouTube extension that will put like Mr. Beast on any YouTube thumbnail. So it's just like that picture of him being like,
it'll be like, what I'd love to see
footage from the war in Gaza with Mr. Beast, like,
yeah,
which is enjoyable. Andy, what's your favorite product?
Other than VGC, of course.
Other than VGC, the greatest product.
Beef hula hoops are quite good, aren't they?
Oh, a wee beef hula hoop.
Mm.
Although I feel like, see, when you eat a hula hoop,
beef McCoy's. Do you know those? You know those new crisps they brought out? And it's absolutely, their product sale is right on point. The Walkers, are they called Max? Mm,
those ones are good.
The ones that are supposed to be tastier for people on the booze. I got some in a train station. I think a train was delayed. And it's like, these are amazing. I went back and got another pack.
Yeah, even as someone who doesn't drink, the cheese and whatever the hottest ones are, cheese and jalapeno or something, but they're fantastic. They are very good crisps.
Mm.
It's just basically just made a pack of crisps based on like a recipe from 20 years ago before they like halved the size of the contents in the bag. Yeah. Took all the flavour out.
I tell you what I don't like. I'm not a fan of the salt and shake.
I've never been salt and shake. I think I had
a bad memory with salt and shake once at school.
Did you accidentally just eat the salt?
No. So for those not familiar, from those across the continent who don't know, it's basically a bag of crisps or chips, if you will. And you came a wee blue sachet of salt that you would pour in and then shake the bag. But I was rather vigorous with my shaking, so I put the salt in, closed the bag, and shook it like mad. And basically the top of the bag ripped off, and the crisps just spilled all over the floor. I get zero crisps from that bag. So yeah, ever since then, the salt shake can piss off.
Vigorous shaking, it will make you go blind.
So
before we go, I went to see the first four episodes of Pokemon Horizons. There is a review on the site. That was good fun. I got to meet Captain Pikachu, which was a lifelong goal of mine. The craziest thing is, see inside those big Pikachu costumes, if you get too close you can just hear, because they've got fans like shooting onto the people's faces. Yeah, and I was just thinking, like, when it was 5,000 degrees in Japan over the summer, they had like a big Pokemon parade and it was all of people in those costumes.
Yeah, they do it every year. Yeah,
yeah.
Even Captain,
I was about to say, like, I went to one of those parades they have in Japan every summer. Man, it's like Japan's like hotter than the sun.
Yeah.
In the summer. Like, I can't think of anything I'd rather do less than be in a Pikachu costume doing a dance in Japanese summer.
You'd lose some amount of weight, to be fair.
See, when Captain Pikachu faints, do you think his daughter like builds a Pika spa? Move on. That was my Captain Tom reference for the month.
Oh. Someone Photoshop that joke going up to heaven.
I already regret it.
Perry and Alan Rickman and Johnny Brookside.
Alan Rickman, that's going back a bit.
That was 2016. Oh, that was also
fair
2016.
Enough.
Theme of the podcast. Oh, I wish I'd died in 2016. Chris, you playing any games this week?
Mostly Game Boy stuff, to be honest. What did I play? In FIFA.
What are you playing Game Boy stuff in aid of?
The Game Boy Encyclopedia. It's going to be quite the tome.
Where can you get it?
Anywhere, mate. Like, anywhere that sells it. Anywhere that sells, funnily enough, beef monster munch will also probably sell the Game Boy Encyclopedia.
So. You get at my local spa. That's some
pound shop.
It's not quite. It's not reached pound shop stage yet. I'm hoping for. Do you get the works in England? Is that just a Scottish thing? Do you get the works, like the kind of bookshops?
I think so. Yeah.
I'm still waiting for the day that my books appear in the works, because that's when you know it's going through the system and they're being discounted to like a fiver a pop. So that I'm still looking forward to that day. That's when you know you've made it, when your books are in the works for a fiver. But not yet.
I'm going to do a Mr. Beast style video where I buy 100 of them and go and hand them out to underprivileged youths.
Thanks.
And they'll go, "What's a Game Boy?" and smack me over the face with it and then stab me. Andy, you bought a Steam Deck yet during this podcast?
No.
You going to do it?
I probably am, aren't I? It's going to happen. Yeah.
You'll annoy yourself if you don't.
Well, the thing is, I mean, obviously, I got a long flight next week and it says 2 to 5 business days, and that's sort of like now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I like, if I buy it, it's just going to arrive when I leave for Heathrow, and that's going to piss me off. So
you think you've left it too late? You think
I would do it then? I would do it right this second. I'll finish this podcast and go and do it, because then it'll turn off.
Blaster off.
Phone Gabe, and be like, "Here, mate, can you expedite me one?" The next week we have. Oh, I can talk about a new game next week. We'll see. We'll see how I feel about it then. YouTube, TikTok. Search on YouTube VGC, a lot of good stuff over there. TikTok VGC _news. If you're watching the video version, you may have noticed I'm wearing this spiffy Bloodborne inspired but legally distinct t-shirt. They sent those over from Gambit Gaming. You can check them out. Gambit Gaming, and I didn't know they were doing this, but if you're a listener to this podcast and you go to Gambit Gaming and you put VGC in the checkout, they'll give you 10% off if you want one of these Bloodborne inspired t-shirts.
I'm reserving judgment until I get one, so I'll take your word for it for now.
Chris, here's my review. It's a black t-shirt. It's quite comfy.
See that much.
And it doesn't stick to me. It doesn't. You don't have to do the thing where you're like pulling it and stuff. It's. I wish the arms were a bit tighter so I could seem jacked.
So what is it? Is it a Jordan 2 out of 5 or a Jordan 5 out of 5?
It's 4. It's fine. I can't be bothered with the argument. You can follow us on Twitter at Jordan Midler, at Scully1888, at Andy_Playtonic. Go and tweet at Andy. Ask him if
Andy
he's lost Steam Deck.
Andy_VGC these days.
Andy_Playtonic. Go and tweet him about if he's got a Steam Deck yet. Thanks to Grant Kirkhope for the VGC podcast theme. Next week we'll have a big game to talk about. But until then, say goodbye, Andy.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Chris.
Goodbye, Chris.
Welcome back, CM Punk. We'll see you next week.
I immediately regret that Captain Tom joke.
VGC, a video games podcast, is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Summer's just around the corner, so give your body the care it deserves with Osea's best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil. Created by infusing Andaria seaweed in barrels of botanical oils, it leaves skin silky soft and glowing. Plus, it's clinically proven to improve elasticity and deeply moisturize without feeling greasy. It's safe, clean, vegan skincare. Get 10% off your first order at OseaMalibu.com with code GLOW, plus free shipping on orders over $60.